Hey, it's Holden Kushner on the Bet Rivers Network. As always, boy, we got a lot going on this show today. Got to talk about the Broncos report card coming out from the NFLPA, and it's a little bit skewed, and I'll tell you why that's the case during the show. Also, let's talk a little abs. We'll have Mark Springer on from Altitude 92.5. I do like the move for Lars Eller. No question about it. Going to get into Jokic being the most misunderstood player in the National Basketball Association, and Kendrick Perkins, I'll tell you why. I just think he's going off and making this a racial thing. And then last but not least, how about a Big Sky betting tournament primer? Northern Colorado saying goodbye to Dylan Kuntz and a couple other seniors. But before we get into anything, Bet Rivers specials today. I don't know how much you're into MLB, but I am. Shohei Ohtani to win the AL MVP or the Cy Young, plus 200. So that goes from plus 170 to plus 200. I actually like that. And then Manny Machado to record 30-plus home runs and 100 RBIs this year, plus 225. Don't mind that one as well. The Shohei thing is fascinating. He doesn't get enough starts to be a Cy Young Award winner, but he's going to be right up there for the MVP. You're giving me 2-1 on the MVP? Not a bad one. All right, let's get into the Front Range Four. Four biggest sports stories on the Front Range. So the Broncos in the National Football Players Association rankings, okay? There was a survey that came out. And for those of you that are overreacting to this or you have heard of this already, it was conducted back in March of and April of last year, of 2022. So this is before new ownership came along. And this organization still from the outside looks like a debacle. I think there's grown-ups running it now with the Penner Group. But just think of what kind of mess they were in at this time last year. So things have changed over the last year. New ownership addressed a couple of concerns. Sean Payton has two. You hope that new ownership surveyed the players themselves, but that's not known. If they didn't, hopefully they do that going forward. And also, there is a D-plus rating for the locker room for the Broncos, and that was upgraded before new ownership took over. So I'll just start with that real quick. The locker room for the Broncos, 22nd in the NFL, given a D-plus rating, but scrap that because they got a new one, and it seems like all the players enjoy the new locker room. So we'll get into the treatment of families. This is not good. Broncos overall grade, 24th in the NFL, according to the Players Association, D-plus. Various players were asked about the treatment of families, food service, locker room, weight room, training staff. Family support, 27th. Post-game gathering areas, 22nd. Build a family room. That's it. You'll be fine. You won't be a D-plus anymore. It's very easy to build a family room, too. Just about every single stadium and sport that I've been at, they have a nice big room. And the families can hang out, the wives can hang out, the kids can hang out, and they can watch the game on TV. And they don't got to worry about all the people there. So just fix that, Broncos, if you haven't already. Food service, nutrition. Broncos brought in Bo Lowry, remember? He's their VP of health and performance, so the food's going to get better, the nutrition's going to get better. They got an overall grade of D. They were 22nd in the NFL, food quality 19th. I mean, can we get some good food in there? You bought this organization for what? Billions of dollars? Was $4.5 billion? Go get the guys some good food. Stop serving them McDonald's. I don't think they were doing that anyways, but come on. Then you got the weight room and the strength coaches. Weight room grade, B+. B+. Strength coach grade, A-. That's 17th. Every team loves their strength and conditioning coaches. Okay, and most teams like their weight room. So it's a good weight room, a very good weight room. They love their strength and conditioning coaches. I don't know how they got an A- instead of an A+, but nothing's going on there. Nothing to see. Training room and training staff. This is what I hear from people around Dove Valley. They need a new training room. They needed a new training staff. They got a new training staff. The training staff grade was a B. That was 28th. Most of them are A's. But you got a new staff in there now. The training room, C+, needs a little bit of an upgrade. Team travel, B+, 12th in the league. Good job by the traveling secretary and everybody getting there. But again, this looks a lot worse on the surface than it actually is. 20th in the NFLPA rankings. This was done before new ownership took over. And the biggest issues have been addressed already. The new training staff. A new locker room. Treat the families better and you'll be fine. All right, that was number one on the Front Range Four. Let's get into number two on the Front Range Four, the four biggest sports stories on the Front Range. Nikola Jokic is the most misunderstood player in the National Basketball Association. So Kendrick Perkins, you may or may not have seen this, former Celtic, he basically said that Jokic is winning MVPs because he's white. And he referenced Dirk Nowitzki winning one when he wasn't on a championship team, and Steve Nash being on one when he wasn't on a championship team. And apparently you got to win a championship and not be white to win an MVP. And we've been hearing this since Jokic won his first one. And he is probably the most misunderstood player in the NBA, and here's why. Number one, Perkins said he was stat padding. He truly doesn't care about stat padding. The reason why he has triple-doubles is because he's an amazing basketball player, and he could do a lot of everything. Not a little bit of everything, a lot of everything. Scoring, assisting, rebounding, defense. Raptor, which is not the Toronto Raptors, Raptor, which is an evaluation system by 538, they even got Jokic. They got Jokic as the best player by far. They even got him as one of the top two or three defenders in the NBA at this point. So he doesn't care about stat padding. All you hear from him is about the team and doing whatever it takes to win a championship. If he doesn't win the MVP this year, I hardly think it's going to bother him. I mean, last year, the whole organization went out there to Sombor. He's riding a horse around. They gave him the trophy. That meant a lot to him. But winning the MVP, you can just tell from this guy, it's all about winning a championship. And then the other thing, oh, well, Jokic won an MVP, but he was on a sixth place team. Why'd he win an MVP? Why'd he win an MVP? Because he had no help. He had no Murray. He had no Porter. He had to literally do everything on this team. Everything last year. They had nothing. Bare bones. The fact that that team was a top eight team last year, maybe even in the playoff or maybe in the play-in games, was an absolute feat for Nikola Jokic. Wow. I mean, because he was sixth, you got to have better arguments, Kendrick. You got to have better arguments. Yeah, he's a white guy in the NBA. He's not traditionally athletic, but he figured out how to dominate non-traditionally. He's a big man that can pass, hit floaters at an alarming rate. He doesn't shoot less than 50%. He takes uber high percentage shots and he hits them. He has the best vision of any player in the NBA. Look at his assist rate. Watch him play. Look at the numbers. Now, I do think there's some former NBA players that are truly bothered that European players are taking over the game. At least some of them. At least some of them. Jokic and Luka. Giannis? Well, he's from Europe, but nobody's calling him out. Jokic and Luka are two of the top three or four players in the game. And I don't think that sits well with some people. And the final thing to get to is how teams evaluate players. And it has left former players like Kendrick Perkins behind. Teams don't look at raw points, rebounds, and assists as benchmarks anymore. Teams don't just use the eye test to evaluate players. It's different. Now it's efficiency. It's wins added. It's value added. And it just so happens that the way teams evaluate players now is the epitome of Nikola Jokic. He is the epitome of modern NBA efficiency. And that's what these front offices are looking at. And it happened in baseball, and it's happening again. In baseball, it used to be batting average and home runs. Well, guess what? We can now evaluate players to figure out who's more effective and efficient. And we've done that in the NBA. So no more batting average and home runs in baseball. No more points and rebounds and you know how much if your team is winning a championship. You're just not looking at that anymore. There's better ways to evaluate players. There's more accurate ways, I should say. So for all of these reasons, Kendrick Perkins just way off. I've gotten into it with him on Twitter before. I'll happily do it again because this is just completely asinine. Some of the arguments he's trying to make here. At a point, it's lazy arguments. Just lazy. All right, let's get into number three in the front range for the Big Sky Tournament. What? Well, if you listen to this last year, I used to bet a lot of Big Sky. There's been other things I'm betting. I'm betting the Nuggets more. I'm betting the Avalanche more. I'm betting the Big 12 more. And I'll be betting the Mountain West Conference Tournament. I can't wait for this. I'm a huge college basketball guy. But for whatever reason, I have not bet as much Big Sky Conference. But I'm in on it. I'm in on it. So here are the odds on Bet Rivers. Montana. So Eastern Washington had like an 18-game win streak. They had won 16 straight in the conference. Lost a couple of games to finish out the conference. And now Montana State is the favorite. Montana State plus 110. To win it all, the Big Sky Conference to get the automatic bid. One team's making it. Eastern Washington plus 240, Montana plus 450, Weber State 11-1. Those to be the four teams that can win it. Northern Colorado 32-1. I just bring them up because I know some of you, some of the listeners went to Northern Colorado. But Eastern Washington looked unstoppable. Like I got in on a couple of their wins during their long win streak, and they were covering at a beautiful rate. But the last two games of the regular season, they fell on their face. They lost at Idaho State. Unacceptable loss there. Unacceptable loss. And then it happened again on senior night. They lost to Montana State, who's now the favorite. Over these last two or three games, their defense took a massive step back. But I'm going to make an excuse for them, and I'm going to tell you why I'm backing them anyways. When you go on a run like they went on, what goes up must come down. And for two games, it just hit them hard. I don't think they're as great as a 16-game conference win streak. They're definitely not as bad as they played over these last couple of games. And I look for Eastern Washington to bounce back and bounce back big. Now, I'm probably in the minority on this one. But with Eastern Washington taking a step back, then they beat them head-to-head. Montana State beat them head-to-head. They are now the number one seed. Or the number one team, I should say. They're the number one team. And Montana State has some issues. They score a lot at the free throw line, but in their last couple of games, they had 16 field goals made, 17 field goals made, and 18 field goals made. You're not going to win consistently by just getting to the free throw line. It's nice that they are aggressive, but we'll see if these games are called tight or not. So Montana State, a lot, more than any other team in the conference, a lot of their points come from the line. So yeah, Montana State's the favorite. I'm going to fade them. I'm going to fade them. Could be wrong. I mean, it definitely could be wrong here. But I'm going to go Eastern Washington plus 240. I feel like I just told you why. Best team in the conference. Don't care about this late conference swoon that they're in. Now, if you want a dark horse, you go look at the fourth team, plus 1,100, 11-1, Weber State. All right, so they beat Montana State, which was big. They beat Montana, too. And the only conference team that they didn't beat was Eastern Washington. They went 0-2. But you know what? If those two teams meet again, it'll be Weber State and our boys Eastern Washington in the championship game. Montana lost by 7 in both games against Eastern Washington. I'm not on Montana. They did win 8 of 9 games to finish things. So again, if you're placing a bet, I'm only placing one. Eastern Washington plus 240. But if you wanted to sprinkle a quarter unit maybe on Weber State, I wouldn't blame you. And listen, Northern Colorado's Dalton Necht. Just want to give a shout out to Northern Colorado real quick. Necht was the only player scored 20 or more points in conference play, 20.1 points per game. Shout out to Dylan Koontz too. What a career. What a remarkable career he had with the Bears. That was number three on the front range four. Here's number four. A couple of things I want to get into real quick. It'll be the Avs and it'll be the Rockies. I'm seeing the Rockies win total at 65.5. And boy, I know they're going to be bad. As a matter of fact, they're probably going to be really, really bad. But they can't get 66 wins? Are you kidding me? Like that 66-96 is a horrific season. Just an awful season. But it is a number that most teams are going to get to. So we're talking about a number that has been set so low. And last year, where we have 67.5, and then I think it went up to like 69.5. Let me get the updated number here. Yeah, 66.5. So it got bumped a one. So it's now 66.5. This team's got to win 67 games this year. They've got, they just have 67-95. They returned some of the starters they had last year. You know, Marquez, Freeland, Senzatella. They're not deep in the rotation. Chris Bryant, though, is crushing in spring training. I've got to think he's going to stay healthy this year. Big problem, though. Brendan Rodgers' shoulder injury, more severe than they thought. That'll be a loss. Lucas Gilbreth, Tommy John surgery. That'll be a loss. But again, this is a bet because they're bad, but not that bad. 66.5 win total tells you that they're one of the worst teams in baseball. And could they be the worst team in baseball? I guess, especially in the division. But really, the Dodgers, the Padres, maybe the Diamondbacks get better. It's a bad division to be in from the top, but they also, you know, face the Diamondbacks, who are not a very good team. Again, people are calling the Diamondbacks a sleeper this year. I still think they're at least a year away. Freeland, Marquez, Senzatella. Not a bad starting three. Not a bad. The problem is there's no depth. The fourth and fifth starters are bad. Bullpen, vacillate every single year. They vacillate every single year. But Brendan Rodgers going down is not good. So what are we going to do at second base now? Does Trejo go there? Do they move another player there? I'm not sure. But this team's still going to hit. Hopefully they hit on the road. Charlie Blackman, still here. We don't have a shift, so I think that's going to help him out a ton. An absolute ton. So, again, I'm thinking over 66.5 wins. What I'll do next week is get into the Rockies for the first time. We'll do a little season preview there. We're in March. We're 4 weeks away, 28 days away from the opening season, opening day. So we'll get into that, and I'll look again at 66.5. I don't think it's going to move. If anywhere, it probably moves down to 65.5. We'll do a Rockies preview next week. And then the other thing, just to kind of combine with that, is the Avalanche. And they picked up a guy by the name of Lars Eller. And I like this guy. Third line center. Not a splashy move, but a guy who's a penalty killer. A guy that's going to be your third line center. That means those of you that didn't want JT Comfort to be your second line center, too bad. I'm fine with that too. But here's a guy that I saw in Washington, and he really, really just turned the tide in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Scored the championship-winning goal with a little over 7 minutes to go in Game 5 and helped the Capitals hoist the cup. And you can't have enough winners. You can't have enough guys that have been there and done that. And Lars Eller is just one of those guys. As promised, Mark Springer, Altitude 92.5. Springer, Lars Eller's here. Tough loss last night. I get it. No big deal. I'm not too worried about that. But let's talk all things Avs. Okay, you got your playoff beard going. I don't know how much bushier it can get, but I'm sure that you can work. Do you shave that thing before the playoffs, or are you just going to continue to grow this muffin out?
I don't know what I'm doing with this thing. There's really no rhyme or reason. Yeah. I trim it every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Barely. I guess now it's a playoff beard. So, and the Avs have been playing better, so I can't shave it now. So here we are.
I can't even describe it right now. It's disheveled. It's big and bushy, but it's a lot better than what I can do there. Okay, let's start with this. Lars Eller, they pick him up. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It's a good trade. It's a depth. It's a top three center. I saw this guy out in Washington quite a bit. Big goals, especially in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So you're great of this move, and do more moves need to happen before the deadline?
Interesting. I haven't thought about the grade. I really like it. I'll go B plus, okay. Border A minus. Like, I won't give it an A or an A plus just because Lars Eller in and of himself isn't like the biggest name in the world.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe for this team and their MO, you could argue A or A plus because, look, Lars Eller fills the one true need that they have, which is center. Now, in a perfect world, it would have been a second line center, which is, you know, one of your more top tier centers in the NHL. Like Ryan O'Reilly certainly would have fit that bill. He went essentially to the Maple Leafs for a first, a second, and a fourth. And he's a UFA, so that would have been a rental because he's going to be pricey in the offseason. So I understand why the Avs didn't want to pay that price for Ryan O'Reilly. They are running thin on prospects and draft picks after last year's big deadline and trades from years past. But Lars Eller, you know, scored the game-winning goal when the Capitals won the Stanley Cup. And Arturi Lehkonen scored the game-winning goal to send the Canadiens to the Stanley Cup Finals. Uh-huh. And the bubble scored the game-winning goal for the Avs to send them to the Stanley Cup last year. I know that Lehkonen is a 27-year-old wing who had term on his contract, and Eller's a 33-year-old center who's a UFA, but his contract is cheap. Those differences aside, I'm getting Arturi Lehkonen vibes with this move. They filled the one need that they had, which was center. It shows a lot of trust in JT Compher to be their second-line center, which I think he's earned. Look, is he putting up the points, and is his goal scoring as dangerous as a Nazem Kadri? No. But if you look at his face-off numbers, he's actually blowing Nazem Kadri out of the water this season. JT's won 590 faceoffs this season. Naz with the Flames has won 440, right in that range. And their faceoff percentage is near identical. In fact, Conference is a little higher. So Conference taking way more faceoffs than Naz, has won way more at a relatively even clip. So JT is doing a damn good job winning faceoffs, which is a huge job for a center. Now, is his point production going to be Nas? Maybe not. But let's say Gabe Landeskog is healthy, which we sure hope so, if the Avs want to win a cup when this thing is all said and done. JT will be on a second line with Gabe Landeskog and Mikko Rantanen. And the way that JT has played this season, 27 years old, in his prime, has been with the Avs damn near his entire career. He was on this team going back to the 48-point season. He has done nothing but develop and grow and work, and he's a UFA this summer, so he's in a contract year. Has that motivated him? Sure. I'll take it, though. I don't care. I'll absolutely take it. So I think that they have a sneaky second-line center in JT Compher. Now, if Lars Eller is your third-line center and you can put Cogliano, O'Connor, Alex Newhook around him, you could put Alex Newhook on your fourth line. If Alex Newhook is on your fourth line, your team is deep. So I love the Lars Eller move. It was their one positional need. And I think it's a classic Joe Sakic move. I absolutely love it.
I wonder if there's another move to come, though. That's my next question. Like, they don't need a big move is the whole thing. But is there another move to come?
Before last night, I would have said no, and still I probably am leaning no. I don't think they'll make another big move. I think Lars Eller was the big move. You saw the couple smaller trades before it. I guess the bigger of the two was trading Andreas Englund, an AHL defenseman who, because of how injured the Avs have been, has needed to play for them and had played admirably just in a pure defenseman in a defensive role. But they traded him to the Blackhawks for Jack Johnson, because Jack Johnson just has far more experience, won a cup with the Avs. That, to me, was the let's shore up the defensive depth move. That was your defenseman move, was Jack Johnson. Now, Josh Manson got a little banged up again last night. In the third period, he kind of got his skate stuck between the end board and the ice, and he went down a little awkwardly. It's tough to say if that was serious. We didn't get an update after the game. I know that the Avs sent Brad Hunt down to the AHL after that game. So that tells me, Cale Makar is going to be back on Saturday against the Dallas Stars. He's been in a full contact jersey recently in skate. They held him out last night, but if they're sending Brad Hunt down, that tells me Cale's ready to go. It also tells me Josh Manson's probably okay. So if Manson's not hurt, you traded for Jack Johnson. I think the defense is good. It's a stacked defense if everybody's healthy. Obviously, Eric Johnson's out, but still, there's a ton of depth. After last night, though, I wonder if they are in the market for a backup goaltender. Pavel Francouz has been hurt a lot this year. Hell, Pavel Francouz has been hurt a lot in his Avs career. And he is hurt right now, wasn't available over the past several games. Because Alexander Georgiev started 12 straight games recently, and on the back half of that 12 straight when Francouz was out, you could tell he was tired. So last night, Jared Bednar said, look, we can't repeat mistakes from last time Francouz was out. We have to give Georgiev a break. They went ahead and started Eustace Onanen, who's 22 years old. He's their best goaltending prospect. He's 22. He's getting some time in the AHL. He's not ready. He showed it last night. He's absolutely not ready. Now, the other trade they made was for a random goaltender the Bruins had, Keith Kincaid. He's not even playing for him. He's an okay veteran goaltender. I'm not sure he's good enough, especially if Pavel Francouz is going to be out an extended stretch. And you also have to account for Pavel just keeps getting hurt. Can we trust him to stay healthy? Can we trust him to stay healthy in the playoffs? If Alexander Georgiev gets hurt, you're screwed. Look, Jonathan Quick's out there, okay? James Reimer, the Sharks goaltender, is an interesting name to me. The Coyotes backup Connor Ingram is a really cheap name that I kind of like.
Hold on. Is Quick getting dealt from Columbus back to here?
I'm not saying he could go to the Avs. I'm speculating wildly that he could go to the Avs. What I do know, though, is that it looks like the Columbus Blue Jackets will trade Jonathan Quick before tomorrow afternoon. Okay. Yeah. So I'm looking at goaltender right now. Do I expect them to do it? No. But I would consider it for everything I just said.
Okay. Last things. We talked about the Avalanche Western Conference futures. I think it was as high as plus 250 when we jumped on it. Now it's plus 185. So there has been some movement actually overnight, despite the loss, which is fascinating. Talk to me about this futures bet here. And when did you get back in on it, if you did?
Yeah, no, this is funny to me, actually, because the way I want to present this is this. This time last year, did I think the Avs were going to win the West? Yes, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. So let me put it to you this way. This year, I feel better about the Avs winning the West this time last year than I do last year. Now, notice I'm saying the West. I'm not saying the Stanley Cup Finals, because the East is a freaking beast. Once we get to the Cup Finals, all bets are off. I have absolutely no idea. But when I look at this Western Conference, dude, I just think the Avs are the best team. We saw them shut out Vegas a couple nights ago, 3-0 in Denver. Mm-hmm. To me, Vegas is the toughest competition for the Avs in the West. All of the big trade acquisitions have been from Western to Eastern Conference teams. It's the East that's loading up. I don't see the true competition for the Avs outside of Vegas. I'd put Edmonton third. They were the Western Conference Finals team last year. If you look at the Western Conference record since January 1st, the Avs have the first best record. The Oilers have the second best record. I just don't like their defense and goaltending. We saw the Avs sweep them last year. Vegas, I think, is still missing something. I like Dallas, but this is a young Dallas team, actually. This is not the Sagan, Radulov, Ben team that went to the bubble finals in 2020. This is the Jason Robertson, Jake Ottinger team. They're a young core. It's like the Avs from a few years ago. The Stars are not ready. The Avs are ready. The Avs are the defending champs. They've been there. They've done that with a ton of talent that's still in their prime. Looking at this Western Conference field, I just love the Avs to win this West. I think it's a great bet.
I got them to win the West, I guess, back in, a long time ago. Doesn't even have the date on this. At plus 350. So this must have been probably back in December. I also, now the futures number is plus 185. I just looked at this. I got a futures for them to win the division at plus 185. So you're not getting a great number, but this could be the last time you're getting any of these numbers hung. Like, they could be down to plus 125 by the time the playoffs start.
Yeah, no, this is it's going to get worse and worse because the Avs are starting to play better and better. And Cale Makar, I expect him to be back on Saturday for a huge game in Dallas against the Stars. And by the way, if you're talking just individual bets, I mean, Alexander Georgiev is going to come into that game on 4+ days of rest. Dallas has been struggling overall in the past couple weeks. I think the Avs are going to go get those 2 points. And here shortly, they're going to be atop the Central. They're going to be battling with Vegas for the top of the West. And you're right, that value is going to go down. But if you want a winner, don't worry about the value. It's still plus money. If you want a winner, it's a really good bet.
I know. Jokic, what you guys talk about Jokic every day, I'm sure. What are some of the things you talk about with him besides for just his greatness? Because I went off on Kendrick Perkins. It's just enough already. Like when you don't, as far as he goes, I don't think he has the mental capacity to make a salient argument why this guy is winning MVPs. He basically said because he's white. Okay, this is where we are on hating Jokic because he doesn't look like a typical NBA player.
I don't understand it. Yeah, I mean, the only real Jokic conversation right now, well, it's two things. It's one, how freaking awesome is this guy? And that's more of a Denver thing because you watch him every night and you're just like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. The dude can barely jump and yet he dominates everybody. And for that reason, I don't understand why the national audience, like this to me seems like the prototypical, if I was to just blueprint, who's somebody that everybody would love? This should be somebody that you'd look at.
I know.
He's funny. He's goofy. He dominates the game in a way that we've really never seen before. It's unique. Yet somehow people are mad about this. I'm really struggling to wrap my head around it. We're going like reverse racism here with he's white. That's why we don't like him. I just don't get it. This whole thing makes no sense.
Well, and I also think the game changed so quickly to analytics. This is the other thing that some of these former players are just like, why did they change everything? I don't understand why they're doing it. Listen, as a guy that was in baseball for a long time, the numbers community versus the scouts community, like it was, there was blood spilled both sides. And it took like a couple of decades. This was 2003 when the book came out. And so we're 20 years later. It took a full decade for a lot of people in baseball to accept the numbers. This is how we're going to evaluate players. I think some of these guys that recently got out of the league just can't wrap their head around it. And they don't understand it.
No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, we grew up with Kobe winning MVPs, even though Steve Nash won those two in between, like whatever.
I grew up with Jordan getting screwed out of MVPs.
But those are the stars, you know, the wing guard scores who get up and throw down and hit mid-range and threes and the fadeaways, and it's that brand, you know. I think I've explained it enough. Jokic is not that. Even for a big man, like Shaq was more explosive than Jokic. I don't know. I'm really grasping, trying to understand what it is. I guess Shaq was more explosive. Kevin Garnett was more in-your-face, trash talker. I don't know. I'm really struggling with this one, Holden. It makes no sense. Like it's like the NBA, it's like the ESPN NBA shows need topics to talk about,
right.
and FS1 and Nick Wright, and they all decided let's just split sides on the MVP conversation. Weird hills to die on here.
Those are weird hills to die on. That's a great line right there. And I get my information on those shows from Twitter. Like I refuse to be a part of the dumbing down of America, but it's happened. And they've done it. So congratulations to them. Okay, my friend, what's going on over there? Altitude 92.5, Kreckman and Lindahl. I know that you're doing Avalanche stuff. Talk to us.
Yeah, Nate and Andy, 3-6 today. And then no Avs, no Nuggets tonight. So it'll be a full hour of the Blitz on 92.5. Ooh. Myself and Mark Burton, only 6-7, talking Nuggets, Avs. Really, whatever pops into Mark Bertinoli's mind or my mind, we will talk about. And then tomorrow night, an extended blitz till 7:30 before Nuggets and Grizzlies on ESPN. That'll be on our station. Huge game, Holden. I think the Nuggets are winning that one tomorrow night. At the very Holden, you want to know why the Nuggets are winning that game tomorrow night?
Why?
Because Ja Morant is a fake. I don't want to be insensitive,
right,
but
fake punk, tough guy.
Thank you for saving me.
The fake tough guy.
And then Av Stars Saturday afternoon between the pipes after that on Altitude 92.5. Me and Raj, that'll be a blast.
Wonderful. Always good to talk with you, Mr. Springer. Thank you very much to Melissa, Adam, Terry behind the scenes for making this podcast happen. Follow me on Twitter at Holden Radio. And I'll be back on Monday again for more of the Denver City Cast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Thanks for listening to the Denver City Cast on the Bet Rivers Network.